Welcome back to the Obajima Podcast. My name is Jeremiah, and I'm sitting with Ari and Adam, and we are the writers of Obajima. You are jumping in on our weekly writers meeting where we talk about a bunch of random stuff, and this week it is pole water. not just a beverage you can drink with the family, but also the name of a village.
Yeah.
also the name of a village on the eastern side of the island. So yeah, this will be the first time we are talking about a location on the eastern side, or the Brackwater Wetlands, that is a village, I believe. Mm. I think everything else has been a little more, you know,
outposty,
yeah, dangerous, yeah, kind of interesting. So this is our first village, and we're going to be jumping into it. It is pole water.
What is this place?
So let's talk about what we know. Pole water is a village on stilts above the water, hence the name. It's on the eastern coastline, and it's the village that's closest to the corruption. The existing village that's close to the, mm-hmm, to the corruption. I believe in the past we had mentioned that perhaps there was once a village in that area, mm-hmm, and it is now no longer in that area. So this is now the closest one. It's a fishing village. We know that much so. But I think really the reason we wanted it there is to have a location that was being directly affected by the corruption in a more meaningful way than some of these other places. You know, if an outpost has corruption on it, or if a, you know, a character has a, you know, someone's dealing with an affliction, but this is a
village, like a collection of people who are actively working together to try to combat, confront, or deal with the corruption in some capacity.
Right, and the people that are here are the ones that haven't left, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I imagine there was a bunch of folks like, it's not worth it.
Got up and left. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe they're traveling through the land of hot water as we speak to try to get to Sky Kite or go to some other location.
Refugees.
Yeah.
It means that the populace of Polewater are quite resourceful. Mm-hmm. Like, they are, you know, they're think fast. Like, corruption, you know, it happened in a very short period of time, this stuff emerged out of the ocean. Pole water might have already been pre-prepared because, you know, maybe there had been tsunamis and earthquakes before this had happened. And pole water had just been like, well, you know, this is what we're going to do to kind of save our village. Whereas other villagers might have just like built sort of general huts. And, you know, when the tsunami came, they just kind of moved inland and then things got wiped out and then they just came back and rebuilt. Mm-hmm. But pole water, for some reason, it makes me feel like they really wanted permanent structures. They didn't want to have to rebuild. And they just knew that this corruption was coming, and maybe they had a magician who, you know, just, you know, had this idea and just levitated everything, and then they quickly bound everything up and did it. So who knows? Mm. But
they're definitely resourceful, and they're definitely, there's definitely a reason why they didn't want to move.
Let's talk about what actually, how much the corruption has shown its head in this actual village. So are we imagining that the corruption is like on the beach adjacent to them, that it's like turned the water black and everything, and they're like sitting in a pool of corruption? Or is it more so the sense that, you know, the fish in the area are all turning skeleton, or they're getting the, you know, people who are eating the fish are getting sick now. Mm. You know, maybe the sands underneath the water are turning black, but the water is yet to shift. Mm. You know, they might be seeing signs. Maybe they're dealing, maybe some people are getting afflicted by it. Like some people are getting sick from being out in the water. Or is it like there's 20 people here and we are fully they're in hell, you know, they're trying their best to save what they can, but it's like,
I think it depends on what we want this place to do,
right,
in the game. So if it's like, we want this place to be kind of your last bastion of civilization before dealing with the corruption directly,
yeah,
then you might put it right there. Like it's in the middle of it. Maybe this is a new development. You know, they've just been recently surrounded. You know, I don't know if we want to be so specific with timeline stuff in a book like this, but the idea that they are, I think we basically say like they're the closest settlement to the corruption.
Yep.
And then, you know, there are options. There are things we could do with it, or tell the DM, give them advice. Just like, hey, if you want to advance the corruption along, this is a great place to have your front line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have a village that's in peril, like directly in peril. Like they might have been skeptics. They're like, it's not going anywhere, or whatever it is. Or you might have people researching it here. And so this is the place where they've set up to do that, conduct that research. But suddenly now they're all in danger. Like directly in danger. It's no longer a thing that you go to see the corruption. Now the corruption has come to them. And then we have to think about if they are surrounded, if we want to just actually put them in the corruption, and their stilts are the things that keep them safe, right? What kept them safe from, you know, from rising waters and all this kind of stuff is the thing that has so far kept the corruption at bay.
Yeah.
Then we have to figure out how do these people survive, right? And then the whole the world building around this village becomes around how they get by.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah, because we have like, you know, some of the things that we're saying about corruption, at least at this point, is that you can breathe within it. It's not airborne. Yeah. You know, like it really only happens when you touch it. And even if you do touch it directly, it's the duration. Like if you kind of immerse yourself in it and pull yourself out, you have a chance of catching this corruption. But if you were to like lie in it and sort of take a bath in this stuff, or if you got stuck in it, so they could conceivably live above it and be fine. If that's, you know, if the corruption has come in that far and it's staying on the ground, it could be also that the corruption came in and then either sunk underneath the surface or kind of went out like a tide, but it's left behind sort of this devastation.
I kind of like the corruption still being far away. Like it's still not like right on their doorstep, but they're feeling the effects of it through the wildlife. Like their people are getting sick because they're eating fish, which are getting corrupted, you know, or have corruption in contact with the corruption.
Yeah. Maybe, you know, they're still dealing with the fact that the tsunami dealt some damage to them. Mm-hmm. You know, they're still trying to rebuild. And on top of that, people are leaving because they're getting sick.
So this is the thing I want to, you bring this up as a, I think with like fantasy worlds, I would love to see this place under construction. Like it was, a lot of it was wrecked. Mm-hmm. I think oftentimes in fantasy worlds, we see them kind of, these towns are complete.
Yeah.
As opposed to like, well, mm-hmm. why wouldn't they be expanded? You know, like there's this idea of, that's it. This is the town.
Mm-hmm.
All the structures that will ever be here are here already, and that's it. And so like seeing like a town that's kind of partially built, you see the scaffolding, you see all that kind of stuff. It's kind of neat.
I like that.
Yeah, because for me, the thing that I haven't like really resolved in my mind yet is what this place looks like. It's up on stilts, but then what is it, right?
Yeah. I mean, like this incomplete thing, like they're still building. I mean, in some ways, like rebuilding might be good because the idea of like they're expanding means that the village is thriving,
and maybe they are thriving, or maybe they're not, like, but the idea that maybe something got destroyed in the tsunami or the earthquake, and now they're rebuilding it, but
maybe the village is split into two areas where it's like there's the docks, like this kind of what used to be the entirety of Polewater sat out there, and now it's partially destroyed. So there's like part of the docks that they're rebuilding, and then there's a tent city that's on the beach, and they're like, a lot of us are living here because we're, one, it's close to the woods because we're now chopping down lumber to do it, and two, the fish are making us sick, so we have to hunt in the woods now to get food, and so now it's a lot more based off of like you're kind of like little bit of refugees sitting in tents, a little bit of like we're trying to rebuild. Yeah. So there'll be different people, you know, the tent civilization, you know, is going to be focused on collecting resources while the other one's working on rebuilding the city. And then, yeah, if we did some like researching, I think it'd be interesting to have them let's say there is someone who's obsessed or is working on trying to uncover what the corruption is, I like the idea if it's a significantly more primitive style of research. Like, they're not a mage. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a lot of really intellectuals, like intelligent people that come and explore and deal with this. But what would it look like if the village captain or the village mayor or leader was like, I'm going to figure out what's going on. But prior to this, they were just a really good fisherman. So they're like, they're like, they have fish that they've skinned and they're like test. They're like seeing how, you know, they have like, what happens when I put salt on the corruption? Like, they're just doing really primitive, basic, trying to get understanding. Mm-hmm. Like, and it would also be cool if they uncover some important information about the corruption, just simply like, oh yeah, you know, we've learned that when you put, you know, limestone on it, it stops spreading or something like that. Or, you know, like they have something, like it reacts really poorly to the jolt spell. So you like electrify it and it moves away or something like that. It'd be cool for them to uncover something in a primitive way.
Well, it's interesting, like their skill set is, they're fisher folk, right? So their skills would all deal with sailing, maybe some navigation, maybe they're paying attention to the stars, maybe they know all about the fish, so they would know about maybe some kind of maybe poisons, maybe some fish have certain kind of, like, if you cut this fish open and you spread the guts here, it does some cool interesting thing if you put it in the sun. They might know about all kinds of sea life, so there may be things under the water, all these resources that they can get, and some of it might be magical.
Mm-hmm.
So then those people, then once the fish are done and that sea is corrupted, then they're taking those skills and then they're trying to find new things to do with them. So it could be like all that stuff informs how they're trying to deal with the corruption, how they're trying to deal with this new way of life. And, you know, as they're trying to, like, I don't know, like they're trying to figure a new way out, or, you know, it's like, well, if this place is fished out, maybe, you know, I'm trying to think of, like, why aren't they moving? Like, why haven't they just said, well, mm-hmm. screw this place, we're going to just go way down the coast until there's no corruption and the fish are good. But right. They're staying there for some reason. So yeah. I don't, that reason might be really interesting.
I mean, it could just be that this is, you know, the tradition full of fish, like a family's full of fishermen who have fished for decades, who maybe care more about the sea than most people. And so it's, you know, the people that have stayed not only want to, you know, keep their home, but they also don't want to see this spread. They're actively wanting to stop the corruption. Like, they can tell that something's afflicting the ocean and they want to help. And they're doing it in a minor way, but they're also just trying to rebuild. So it's, you know,
is it an AHA or I guess an AHA outpost? Like, is AHA really present there? Like, they are, it's almost like a scientific, you know, a research station, you know, like, or is it like, it used to be a really thriving fishing village. Now AHA has kind of moved there and the villagers are working with them because the villagers know, you know, all the layout of the land mm-hmm. and the ocean, and they're helping AHA like understand, like, here's what happened, here's what we witnessed, here's what we saw.
Sure.
And AHA's like taking all this data down because they have all this eyewitness information, and they also just kind of have a sense of the natural world and how it's being affected.
I think the reason I wouldn't want to put AHA there is I think it's interesting to have multiple organizations interact with each other, and if every time something has to do with the corruption or something intellectual mm-hmm. has to happen, it's only AHA mm-hmm. dealing with it.
Yeah.
It kind of
feels like they're ever present and everywhere. Yeah. But in reality, we've painted them to be a really small organization. Yeah. You know, so I think it'd be more interesting if, you know, especially because on the map AHA is in the coastal highlands, like that's where their section is.
Yeah.
If they're going through to meet the corruption, which is, you know, if you can imagine the point on that island is where the corruption kind of touched down, they'd probably stop there to investigate the corruption. If pole water's way further up north and east, they'd probably stop at the corruption and not continue to explore. So the fact that on the opposite end of the corruption is a different group of people also dealing with it, and maybe they have, you know, you had mentioned earlier in our talk about Toggle. We talked briefly about these venomous Rex.
Oh yeah.
which is a fish folk who has turned skeletonized itself via the corruption and is this living kind of undead style creature. And you mentioned like stonefish venom or something like that. And what if Aha are not fishermen. They don't know anything about the ocean really. Mm. But this group of people could be like, oh, well, stonefish venom is like, maybe they have slowing that bit of information. You know, we're giving everyone stonefish venom to try to slow it down, which, you know, usually would kill you. But in this regard, it's working.
Mm.
And so I think it's just interesting to have a different perspective on the corruption compared to the same perspective everywhere you go.
Yeah.
Which is like, we're trying to figure out what it is for science compared to other people are like, we're trying to save the ocean and the island. And it's a more spiritual reason behind it compared to Aha's more intellectual aspect.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah,
that's neat.
And then it's also cool because then you can, you know, what happens when you bring Aha there as a party and you go, you show like the uppity scientist and you bring him over. And you're like, and the scientist is like, I'm not going to listen to this guy. And the fisherman's like, well, if you put this paste on it, it stops the thing. And they're like, well, what's the paste made out of? Well, we collected some berries and we did. And they're like, and so like it's interesting to see those two things combined as a possibility.
Another reason, if we wanted to look at why they haven't left, is you could imagine, you know, a few older residents who have been here their whole lives. And they're just like, well, we're not going anywhere.
How would they survive the journey through the Brackwater wetlands?
And so then you have people who are like, we can't just leave them.
Mm-hmm.
So we're here, you know, we're staying with them.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So then you have a larger group that kind of, you know, has stuck around just to make sure that, well, we can't leave these folks, you know, kind of thing.
And those folks probably founded Polewater a long time ago. Yeah. They're like, oh, this is the best place to get fish. Mm-hmm. And so as younglings, they, you know, journeyed through the dangers, but now they're all 80, 90, they're not going to make it through the wetlands and survive. And the journey, especially because the other option would be to go around the land of hot water, around the Brackwater wetlands, which would be a really long journey before you even get to, you know, Skykai Valley on the opposite end. You know, it's just hard times. So very interesting, though. I like that.
I just want to say one more thing real quick about why people might be here. Another thing you could do is, we talked about, and there are a few towns already that have corrupted rangers that are there. But what if, you know, this could have, like, everybody here is already corrupted. You know, like, you have this whole thing. I'm imagining, again, like, you know, Ashitaka, you know, it's like you have a whole town that has been, you know, corrupted in some way. And it's like they're all living here. That's what, like, where are we going to go?
It's almost like leprosy at that point.
Mm-hmm. But they've slowed it and they're just, you know, trying to figure it out.
Yeah. They're trying everything.
Yeah. Mm, they're getting turned. Maybe a group of them did escape and go somewhere and they were turned around. They didn't come back.
Yeah. And where are we going to go?
What if in a weird way, they're kind of like embracing it? Like, I don't know. This might not go anywhere, but it's like, maybe they're embracing it. Maybe they see even the corruption of the natural cycle and they're just like, this is all part of the thing and we're just kind of going with it and we don't know where it's going, but we're not resisting it.
That's like a cool NPC also.
Yeah, that's true.
But it also is an active sickness too. So like it would be, it'd be contradictory to the human desire to live.
Yeah.
For them to just be like, we're all dying now and we're chill with it.
But you could do something where you might have a character here who's like, who's become a necromancer, you know, who has these like skeletal fish that float through the air near them. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, I've had a connection with these, you know, the corruption, you call it the corruption, they might call it something else, has let me kind of like
become one with this kind of, with the world. Now, like these skeleton things are almost like appendages of myself, right? Like I'm expanding through this.
They're manifesting unique abilities from the corruption specific to them.
Yeah.
Where they have kind of like, control over some of these corrupted creatures.
Yeah, like that
that's
thing
pretty
that
cool.
The corruption is, it's informed. They've gone with it, they've rolled with it, And as they're doing it, they're learning something about like this necromantic ability.
Does the corruption have, you know, they might see the corruption as having a will, whether it does or not. It doesn't matter. Like they would describe it like it does.
Yeah.
You know, it could be something interesting. Like, I don't know.
It's interesting. Yeah, that sounds like that character might be at odds with another character who's trying to cure the corruption. And maybe maybe there's sabotage going on in the village. Like, like someone found one of the poles split. Like someone cut those poles at the base. Like this, someone swam underwater.
It's been swimming.
Yeah. Or so who can hold their breath underwater and cut these poles are huge. Who could cut that in half? Well, it's not cut with a saw. It looks like it's been scraped at with bone. Mm-hmm. And he's just sending these skeletal fish under to weigh at the poles until they're gone and shredded. He's like sabotaging it.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
You can just imagine somebody who has this corruption that will just like, could be just like a weirdo, just like walks into the water and just, they just go off. It's like, what's going on? And they don't come back for days and then just like emerge again. It's just like,
what if you pull like a two-sided kind of situation where maybe the village leader who's under the guise of trying to help everyone is like beginning to turn in this kind of direction. And so during the day, he's this village leader who's helping the support the thing. But in reality, he's like sabotaging stuff because he's gaining this ability to do sort of, it becomes this kind of two-faced. They could even be like brother or siblings. Like, you know, maybe the person who's trying to cure the corruption is...
You always want to put rifts between siblings.
I'm a big sibling riffer. we can do a different family dynamic, which would be even more interesting, which would be, you know, like what if, well, maybe it's not as interesting. Maybe it'd be interesting if it was the opposite where like the child of the village leader was this person. And like kind of a little twisted.
And that's cool because then people are more willing to overlook it.
Yeah.
Right? Like
That makes that character really interesting. You're not going to kill that character.
No.
You have to save that kid, but the kid doesn't want to be saved.
Yeah. I mean, there's this there's this weird thing of like necromancy being a gateway to immortality. So, you know, like the idea that our human, like you mentioned earlier, like the human desire to live. So what if you turn that dial way up and you've got this thing of like, this person might have realized that I could be immortal. Mm-hmm. Like if I, you know, give up life,
it's the idea to persist instead of live.
This like fish,
just linger.
This fish will live forever.
Yeah.
I've split this, you know, skeletal fish in half and put them back together and they still exist in that form. Like this is consciousness and mortality, immortality.
Dude, what if, you know, like in this fisher village, maybe they have fish skeletons hanging around and, you know, the corruption comes in and then all these fish skeletons begin to like shake a bit and then all of a sudden they all start to float off.
Yeah.
And everybody's like horrified and the Sky King like sloughs off all its flesh and it's now this skeletal cartilaginous thing going through the sky and they're like, whoa. And this kid who's obviously really in trouble, like has issues, is seeing that and is like, wow, these things all are dead and yet they've come back to life. So this is the key to everlasting life. This is life beyond death. And maybe we could write in the story that, you know, whether it's the father or the mother who is the leader of the village, one of the parents had died early in this kid's life. Mm. And this kid has just been obsessed with like resurrection. Like, how can I bring back my dead parent or something like that? But it's like, there's a reason why this person is the way they are.
Yeah.
And then they're like, they see that and they're like, this is evidence. This is like irrefutable evidence that dead things can live again. And then they're like, I want to wall myself off against death. And then they embrace this stuff.
I think if you make this person a child, like a, not just like a child in the sense that like this, the son or daughter of the village leader, who could be 20 or 30,
sure,
yeah. Right. Making this person like 8.
Whoa. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking of the kid, there's the art that you have.
Oh, standing
over the water.
Oh, whoa.
Is that
that is one 100%.
Is that like time
this now?
Is this like some quantum mechanical time link up that Ari probably, yeah, you guys probably that commissioned is that art in the future.
1000%.
Holy
this kid.
Shmoly.
So it's a little girl then.
Yeah.
It's a little girl, the daughter of the village leader.
Whoa.
Who is now like connecting with the corruption in a spiritual way. Yeah. And like, and again, the desires for this kind of necromantic live forever type thing is rooted in something really sweet and soft, yeah, and earnest. Tender. But it's to get it, it's going to be not kosher.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, it also it changes. This is a tonal departure from the rest of Obajima, but also we've been talking about, you know, the farther east you get on the island, the more serious things get.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think this is a cool, I mean, tonally an interesting capstone. If this is your journey, you're starting in Okiri Village and you end up here and you're dealing with this kind of stuff. You're not dealing with, you know,
sheep dragon and pixies
and
bora bugs.
And happy, happy joy.
You're dealing with a kid who's like dealing with their own stuff and, you know, things they don't entirely understand, and they're getting involved in powers that they can't really understand. Mm-hmm. And there's something really interesting about that.
There's something really cool about maybe this emotional connection, like when this little girl gets cornered and they realize who's been doing these things. I'm burping up a burger here from our lunch. Who's been doing these things? It'd be cool to see her get frustrated, get angry, and then people with corruption who have been corrupted or are dealing with this illness, like it's like maybe they all freeze in place when she gets angry. Yeah. Like she locks them up.
Yeah.
And they like stop moving, and then she like calms back down. And they all have like, but the scary part is that's everyone in the village.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just like, you know, like the party will be the only one who isn't helpless to help. Yeah. And maybe we got a corrupted ranger.
Yeah,
then. Maybe only part of the party.
Yeah.
Or someone who has the corrupted feet also would be under this. So how cool would it be if like a party of three, only one of them can move? Oh, you know, the sorcerer has to now like try to calm this little girl down.
Like you got
to
roll a, you know, DC 20, like, you know, check. And, you know, if you can resist her sort of command.
Yeah.
And you're like, whoa.
That's pretty cool.
There's also interesting things like character-wise where, you know, we talked about this idea of having like narrative unlocks for abilities and feats and stuff like that. What if there was something where if you can, she's an antagonist in that she's using the corruption in a way that is clearly not healthy.
Yeah.
But the idea also is she's unlocked certain powers. And so she also might be a source for somebody to learn how to do this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be interesting of just, you know.
She also might have insight on the corruption that no adult has.
I think she should.
Yeah, she could have, you know, visions or dreams or
understanding,
or just know it, you know. Like maybe she goes under the water and she wades out there and she sits there for a day.
Maybe she's the one who knows.
Venomous Rex.
She's Venomous Rex.
You might have a situation where, you know, if we want to go with the idea that one of her parents, you know, died. There might be a thing where this is how she actually came in contact with the corruption.
Is that maybe there was, a boating accident or something like that. Maybe they were actually out at sea when this tsunami happened. It capsized their boat.
Yeah.
You know, the parent has this kind of tragic death, and the kid is essentially embraced by, you know, by this corruption that emerges from, you know, from deep in the ocean.
Yeah.
And might, you know, like maybe something.
Yeah.
Maybe she also has a, like a, the only true understanding of, so this is a mystery in the book that only DMs get to know. So I'm going to say code, but I'm going to say in code here, but we understand what the corruption is doing to the island.
Yeah.
Maybe she understands that.
Yeah.
That's great. For sure.
Which would be interesting. Also interesting for what that means the corruption is, if there's kind of this
interesting like
communication.
Yeah, the DM would be like, if she knows it and she doesn't know how to put it into words.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like she's that young. She's 8, you know, so okay. she's trying to say things, but she's saying it in a way that like a DM could have a lot of fun with that. Like, let's, you know, take what I know about what this thing's actually doing. And then how does it
describe it like an 8-year-old was describing it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I love this character so much. Wow.
It makes the song that you posted, it just makes that, just it adds so much like context to it. I like that.
Man.
It's crazy. Yeah, I think that's really, really cool. Interesting. Okay, so I like that. We have this little girl, she's a cool NPC. We have a
her parent, whoever is still alive.
Yeah, mother or father, whoever's still alive.
Just dealing with it. Dealing with that, and also dealing with the village.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Which means that character might also only be functioning at like 40%.
Yeah.
Right? Like they're actually not holding it together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it the parent or is it another sibling and both the parents died? Where it's like it's her older brother or something like that.
That's cool.
How tragic do you want to get?
Yeah,
let's really get this going.
Get
the tears going.
Yeah, turn it up. Which means then there must be some kind of adult that is, or it's like, you know, an avatar situation where it's just Sokka and Katara, you know, like they're holding the fort, you know.
Yeah, if the older brother or older sister is like 17.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, all the village, like your parents were the leaders prior to this.
Yeah.
And now we're looking towards you. And this 17-year-old's really stepped up to take it over.
They're just at that age where they're not too young that an elder villager will step in.
Yeah.
But they're not old enough yet to really kind of be able to handle it.
You could do something kind of cool where this is a character, the sibling left. They left the village, right? They only got the news of what happened, like from wherever they were. They had to come back. So now, I don't know how layered you want to get with these NPCs, but this idea is also kind of like, there's probably like a hint of resentment. Mm-hmm. They had to come back. They opted not to be in this village. Now they're here and they have to run the village and they're dealing with their own grief and the grief of their sibling. And it's just, you know, but they might have kind of more worldly knowledge as well.
They're coming
from you know, outside and
maybe
something there.
Maybe they were part of the courier brigade, like the older sibling.
Cool. Yeah.
And then they're like, maybe there's some frustration there too, where they're like, I'm sending word to the courier brigade. They need we need supplies, but no one's coming out. Nothing's coming out. No one's coming and help us. You know, and that's cool. So too, because then that's an interesting story hook where it's like, you want to help the village, you need to go find the courier brigade, like bring back the siblings' patch.
They're all bogged down in the, you know, wetlands
somewhere. Exactly, and you need to get them through, which is cool. I like that as a story hook. So we have these two siblings, these two characters potentially. Who are other characters that are important here?
You might have, so we're talking about how there might be refugees who leave this place. There are refugees once they leave. But you might have some spirits or, you know, that were living in the place where the corruption has actually made landfall.
Yeah.
Who have now come to this village and they're kind of, you know, here. There might be a cool spirit or something like that. I don't know what they're doing, but it would be an interesting, like they would have basically a lot of firsthand knowledge of the corruption. Although like a lot of characters here will already have that. So I don't know how much we have to hit that note, but.
Yeah. Thinking about like what would a Nakadama do here? Like if there was a Nakadama villager, and I'm thinking of like, you know, I think the adventure here is dealing with this story about these NPCs. So maybe the Nakadama, like it would be interesting if there's a villager that sees this and thinks it's like, this is trouble.
Yeah. Like this happened long ago to a Nakadama. Like maybe there's some myth, you know, where it's like one of, maybe about the demon, you know, the Nakadama demon that turned and became a demon.
The bone speaker.
Yeah. And this Nakadama was like, this is a sign. Like we've got to, you know, like, not, I don't know about like, we got to kill this kid. It's like, but like, we got to deal with this.
Right.
Like, this is not good. Like we've got to do something.
This is the demon.
She could turn into a demon.
Reincarnate. Yeah. That's interesting.
She could, she could turn.
So maybe that character is, maybe there's signs that something strange is happening around the village, like the signs of kind of someone messing with the poles and like wood supplies going missing or things like that. And they might be attributing that to like a monster or a creature. And this person's like trying to hunt it down because they think it's something bigger. But then that's also interesting too, when if it does get uncovered that there's a little girl, they might be more calloused. They might be like, we got to throw her back in the ocean or something, you know? to tie it to some other things, it looks like you have something though.
Right? I said the thing, because we're talking about her going into, the kid going into the water a lot. The idea of like, you know, venomous Rex being skeletonized and all that kind of stuff, there might be this like reverence. It's like skeleton Rex is a terrible creature and like vindictive and whatever, but like,
you know, I can almost imagine a thing where she goes down into the water and she's perfectly safe, even if there are monsters and stuff in the water, because like venomous Rex and company like make it their business to protect her. So now if you're going in to deal with her, even if you're there to like try to help her, you're now like going to come face to face with you know, these viper fish folk, and you know.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Well, it also could be too that their initial encounter was more like insidious, where he was like, oh, we're gonna eat this little thing, and then they all get close and she like gets scared and they all like lock into place and freeze.
Yeah,
and they're like, whoa, okay, hold on, there's something more going on here. Yeah,
what did you just do to us?
The one of the other things I was thinking, if the village is really trying to rebuild right now, there's probably like a woodcutter, like someone who's leading expeditions into the wetlands. So, because a part of this is going to be you're dealing with the things that are coming out of the sea, you're dealing with the ocean, and you're dealing with this storyline. The other part of it is it's a village trying to collect resources from the Brackwater wetlands, which in general are dangerous. So there's plenty of hooks that we can throw into, whether like we need to get wood from over in this area, you know, or, you know, we're trying to get resources, or there's a monster who's coming after us. And then another aspect too, which you were kind of talking about, which is like a group of people that are trying to leave. There could be like a 3 or 4 people who are trying to hightail it out of here, who don't want to go through the woods. And so they're stealing lumber and they're building themselves a ship, like a small one. And they're going to try to sail around to Skykite. You know, they're like, we're going to go, you know, we're leaving this place, you know, all the wood resources are going towards building the village. So they're like stealing some stuff, which could only lead into the whole conspiracy that there's a monster attacking the island or attacking the village, where they're like, wood's going missing, you know, and it's not this little girl, but it's this, it's, you know, this other group of people who are, you know, perhaps more self-centered on themselves.
Does that mean that there is an effort to keep people there?
I think maybe the effort is they're all uniting to fix the village, and these 4 people are looking to steal resources that aren't theirs. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not working to help the village, and they're actively taking, you know, material that are being used.
I mean, like, is there, you know, apart from like, say, a group of the elders of the village that want to stay, and they're like, you know, we grew up here and our ancestors were here. Like, is there another reason? Like something where, like, I don't know, something weird. I'm kind of like want to go into like a Star Trek reason, like why, you know, they're like, if we leave here, our spirits removed from our bodies, and we just, you know, like this is the way the Iwo people are, you know?
It's like, well, Aryan mentioned like the fact that they were all sick and that they tried leaving and got turned away. Like if everyone's afflicted by the corruption.
So they're just like, we're all going down the ship together.
Well, they're like, well, there's, you know, we'd rather stay here, rebuild, and try to.
They're thinking if there's a cure to this, it's going to be within the corruption.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we have to know what this is. Maybe that, I mean.
And so like, there's that. There's also like, we can't abandon these old folks who aren't going to make it through. The fact that they're old and they're sick, they're not going to make it through you know, there's a lot of compounding things that are keeping them on this side.
I think. And as a fishing village, though, so they would have boats. So that's what I'm wondering.
Well, they would have boats, except all those boats were most likely destroyed during the tidal.
Okay.
The tsunami, you know. Like if their village is barely standing, you know, the boats are sundered. Maybe they have one left, but they're using it to, you know, haul, you know, they're using it as like a platform to stand on when they're building out on the ocean side or stuff like that.
Sure. Is so we've got, you know, the NPCs, we've got like when an adventuring party comes here, like they can engage with this girl and the young, you know, leader of the town. Is there another sort of adventure vector?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was thinking maybe the woodcutter as like a, you know, if the young leader is working on trying to cure this thing, then another person who's leading the resource gathering efforts, you know, like a burly person who's kind of like rough and tumble, who's going to go out and cut logs down and bring it back. And they may need assistance on protecting themselves against howlers or, you know, living mucks or slimes or things like that that are out there. You could also have like a character who's you're on the water, so maybe there's like a glass blower
or something like that who you know is, I mean, it's, you could do it. I mean, it could be in, is the corruption, can you put the corruption in glass jars? Will the corruption spread through glass? Because there could be this kind of like old school medieval style of like, what if you just scoop the corruption, put it in a glass ball and bury it?
Yeah.
And so like
some, it's like Raku firing, yeah, or something.
Some people are just like making jars and like putting corruption, like corrupted goop and slime into it and sealing it and burying it under the ground.
It's weird. Like, you know, these people, like if they're all corrupted and they kind of realize like, well, we all kind of know where this is going. They might be just sort of like, we're just living for the day. Like, you know, and people are like, you know, like, and when you're talking about a glass blower, I'm like, wow, maybe this person just like, you know what? I always wanted to do this. And they're just doing, somebody else is like, I've always wanted to, you know, like, I just like making fishing nets. That's what I do. And even though there's no fish, this is what I love doing. It's like, they might have this really kind of like live and let live, or just living for the moment kind of attitude. I don't know. I mean,
they probably don't have a lot of capability to do anything but rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, let's say it's a, if it really is a small village, like 50 people in it or 40 people in it, they're all sick and their village is destroyed. So like their day and effort is like, we're gathering resources. We have to make, we can't fish anymore, which is the thing that we did forever to feed ourselves because the fish are making us sick.
Yeah.
So now we have to go and hunt, and we're trying to build, rebuild our village.
Mm.
While at the same time we're doing these ancillary things like trying to cure the corruption or, you know, these other small things. So really it's like, you know, it is a refugee camp with a partially built village adjacent to it is kind of really what it feels like it's turning into.
Yeah.
You know, they really are, you know, it'd be crazy for a mass disease to spread through a village at the exact same time that the village was destroyed after an earthquake and tsunami. Like, these people are just trying to survive. And so they're just doing their best to rebuild.
So is there an answer to it? Like, is the answer within the village? Like, it, as far as an adventure is concerned, like, or is the answer somewhere else in the island? Like, do adventurers come here and they see like, whoa, and they help out a little bit, but then they realize like we got to help these people. Like, what do we do? And is the answer somewhere in there, or is the answer somewhere else? Like, they have to travel somewhere else, find something, get a cure, bring it back.
I mean, they could do is, you know, they could turn to the village and go, have you heard of a place called Tidewater?
Because
they have a spell that allows you to form instant walls. And so you could almost like, maybe new pole water like a mini version of Tidewater, where they're, you know, they, the solution for these villagers who've probably never traveled to the opposite end is to be like, you have a sister town you're not aware of that dealt with the same thing. And the way they've dealt with fixing it is through magic. And then you, somebody teaches the first level spell that allows you to create a sand wall and make it permanent. And now there's a solution. Like, we are going to build you in a town on the shore.
Wow. Yeah.
That's cool. That's something that like these villagers would never have heard of. Or understood.
be interesting if like there is a villager that you could like say they're like, we know of Tidewater, we're going to take you, this villager, and we're young villager, and we're going to take you to Tidewater
so you can learn the spell from the master.
Yeah.
And then they can bring it back to their village and save their village, you know.
That's cool.
I dig that.
Because all that requires is someone to be able to cast a first level spell.
Yeah.
So you need to get one person from commoner status to wizard level one or druid level one.
Yeah.
You know, which could happen. You know, you could do that. Or not even a wizard, just like the feat.
Or
arcane initiate, you know?
Or could you put it in a wand? You know, it's like, here's a wand. You got three uses of it. Yeah. You know, like,
here's a cassette.
Yeah. Here's a cassette.
Yeah. So that's interesting. That's a cool, like, you know, it's a cool solution. And maybe one of the Avenger hooks is just like, how do you solve them rebuilding? Do you help them cut down a bunch of trees?
Yeah.
You know, build, like, four adventurers at fifth level or seventh level, you can cut down a forest in a day. You know what I mean? You know, how do you deal with that? How do you help them rebuild in a meaningful way? And there's a lot of ways. You can come up with any solution you want.
I think that's the part I'm being stuck on. It seems like the solution's right there, in that you can, like, the logical solution is let's cut down some trees and build this thing. But I'm wondering if we could add a little bit of tension where there's a reason they're not cutting down trees. Right? Is there something that's special in the nearby forest? Or is there, I don't know, like, is there a reason they're not doing that? Yeah.
What I was saying is, you know, if they're all sick and there is a small group of people.
The Brackwater wetlands are the most dangerous forests anywhere here. So might be cutting down a tree a day, because every time they go out, a howler or a slime attacks them. So like there is no, you know, they are getting resources, but really slowly.
Yeah.
Right. You're either defending them as they're doing it, or you're doing it yourself, or you're getting them an alternative.
Yeah. So, you know, they're struggling to rebuild because they're not prepared to deal with the forest and they can't fish anymore, and on top of that they're sick.
And I mean, I could totally see a party of adventurers being, you know, getting into kind of like these, getting frustrated with these villagers and being like, look, like, we just got to get you out of here, like, we don't, let's just get you away from this horrible place,
which is totally fine too, like, hey, we're gonna do a new, you know, new Pullwater is gonna be in the middle of the Gale Fields. Good luck.
It's like, yeah, we know this is your ancestral place, but sorry, like,
yeah, you
know,
we'll come back to it later.
Yeah, like,
we gotta cure you first.
Yeah,
or we gotta take you to Aha or something, you know.
Yeah,
like, we gotta get you some healing.
Yeah.
This is the
most eastern.
Yeah, this is the most eastern Obajima. People are dying. They can barely defend themselves. Yeah,
it's grim.
It's grim. You're going to do a lot of work to save this town.
I like that, you know, that it's sort of, the Brackwater wetlands, it's like you don't go in there. I don't know. Like, I'm trying to think of a comp in my head of like, what is this place like? It's like Fanghorn Forest or something. Mm-hmm, like, it's just so aggressive and weird, and there are monsters in there, and, you know, this one burly woodcutter is like the last, like, maybe three people before this person.
He's just the last woodcutter.
The last woodcutter. Intro to Iron Man or whatever. That is, and the cool part too is you could get there and they could be very, like, pompous too, where they're like overly confident for a reason, where they're like, don't worry, I'll take care of this. But then in the corner, you can see they're like, you know, cough up a little blood and they're not feeling good, but they're trying to show face for the rest of the villagers.
Yeah. The rest of the village is, you know, just in this miserable state.
Yeah.
It's actually, there's a cool story moment in there where, you know, most of the villagers have already been, they're corrupted.
Yeah.
And you have this last one, like, known for their, like, constitution, right? Like, they can withstand. And when you meet them, they're not corrupted. But at some point, like, as when you're at the campfire at night or whatever.
Yeah.
And you see for the first time, it's like,
That's cool.
Ooh, that is interesting. What if not everyone is corrupted? What if there's some people that are still fine, and this little girl's trying to introduce corruption to them?
Oh,
Like her brother or her sibling, her older sibling isn't corrupted yet. And like, she just keeps on trying to like maybe she's, maybe the older brother's attacked by one of these skeletal fish or, you know, like there's something where she's just trying to introduce this to him or to them. So it can be, you know, you can be like me, you know, we can, you know, we're special.
Yeah.
I just want her to have like a necklace of like fish heads that then like animate and just like,
That's cool. That's really cool. Yeah. Depending on how the players interact with this little girl, she could be a very, very scary villain.
Mm-hmm. Oh man.
Or a very, very like, you know, tortured soul that they can help.
Yeah.
Maybe both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, yeah, it's very cool. I just thought this character is very cool.
Yeah. It's
very, very cool.
I dig that.
Well, yeah.
What else is in the water? Yeah, this is the idea that it being a stilt village basically tells us that the water is really important. And we knew it was because that puts it on the front line where the tsunami was. And we know that the corruption is coming. But what's currently there? What's going on? Like we talked about, you know, Venomous Rex and company, but like.
Well, also Venomous Rex is probably not even near there.
That's right. You're right.
He's probably on the other side because he's encroaching on the crew side. Mm-hmm. So it could be that there are other kind of factionless fish folk who exist in this space who are partially corrupted that might attack.
Could be corrupted elder spirit.
Corrupted elder spirit or.
Like a giant Mori eel, you know, that's like, you know, 40 feet long.
I want to introduce the, is it gulper eel or whatever they are?
Oh,
the
things
that
with
their mouths open on the thought. I think that's very interesting. So it could be that this thing is.
I mean, that's also a good, interesting aspect for conflict too, where you deal with this little girl and in the middle of the conflict with the little girl, this thing appears and it's like, you need to turn to her for help.
Yeah.
You can also do a thing where you're dealing with the ramifications of like the wetlands are kind of low lying anyway.
Yeah.
But you imagine like this tsunami comes in and could deposit things in these like wetland bogs and stuff like that. So this 40-foot eel might be a little bit in there.
Dude, it's like, that's cool.
And it's like, oh, that is not, we did not expect
cover,
that.
It's like, slimy through the clay and the mud.
Like mud skipper eel almost. Yeah.
Or it's got like, you know, because it's deep sea, it like has bioluminescent things. You can see it in the mist. It's like,
what is that?
Yeah.
It's like will-o-wisp, but it's not.
The woodcutter's like, stop. Don't come near that.
Yeah. Don't stop moving. Do you believe in the eel of unusual size? Yeah. No, I don't think they exist. That's great. I love that. That's really cool. That's a really interesting creature out there.
That's neat, yeah.
And it's not the only creature in the Brackwater, but it's one of them.
Yeah. I think the horrors that are in the wetlands would be fun. And you know, it just introduced a bunch of new ones. Things that got swept in. Could be cool.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I think for points of interest in this space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just really minor ones. Again, because it's so in disrepair, you know, I think points of interest are probably, you know, the actual remaining structure. Maybe like the actual remaining section of Polewater is 3 or 4 buildings.
Mm.
You know, what used to be 20 or 30 is now 3 or 4.
There's just like just poles that are left.
Yeah, exactly. Know? And maybe that's one of them is like turned into a makeshift lab for the older sibling who's like going through and experimenting.
I wonder if like the tsunami or the earthquake and like that whole thing, like, you know, kind of riffing on the like this, it, all this water came in and left behind a bunch of debris. Maybe something weird got washed up on shore
or revealed.
It could be something from the first age. It could be something just bizarre and weird.
Yeah,
it could be like, you know, a thing that should not have been unearthed, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I wouldn't want to get Lovecraftian, but like something strange that maybe one of the villagers is trying to hide. Like, it's they think it's dangerous, or they covet it and they're like, this thing is really, it's speaking to me. Like, it could be a spirit that's like, maybe it's like a, I don't know, like a, you know, like a one of the old digital recorders, and when you press it, it gives like a, it's giving you a message, or it's saying some cryptic thing.
Remember to buy bread.
Yeah.
What's this bread?
Buy a loaf.
Drink more Ovaltine. What? I like it. I feel like it might be a little too close to the connection the little girl has to the corruption and like kind of that ominous feeling. But I don't hate first age tech being uncovered. So maybe like a
car or something was recently thrown up, like an old K truck or something like that, or that could be kind of interesting.
A boat, or an old submarine. Mm-hmm. I mean, it could be like a submarine. You could use parts for the pontoway.
What if a ton of, based off of the mystery type stuff that we, you know, we're not going to get to them to. What if there's just a ton of first age stuff that's like being washed up on shore right now?
Cool.
Like corrupted old first age stuff that's just like constantly. So these shores near are now full of like waterlogged cassettes and waterlogged old things that are just like constantly appearing. And so part of the things that you can do is you can go beach combing now, you know, to this group of people. This is valueless because they're focused on rebuilding, but to an adventurer party, you know, the beach, the fact that the beach now washes up some first aid tech every once in a while is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Especially in this one area.
Yeah, that's cool.
If you don't, you know, if you catch my drift, if you understand where I'm going for it.
If you're picking up what I'm putting down.
If you're picking up the cassette that I've thrown into the ocean.
Yeah.
When there are things like cassettes with first age tech, I always want to know or be able to tell the DM what's on them, right? Like, I don't know if we have like a master list of, here are things that, you know, cassettes could be any of these.
Yeah.
Or do we specify it in the location of just like, you know, these cassettes are political speeches or whatever. Yeah. You know, I don't know why I went there, but like
We might be able to put a list of like a D12 of random junk that floats up.
Yeah.
And anything beyond that, the DM will just have to come up on our own. I mean, this is also like a, you know, the perfect place for a DM to throw in a weird MacGuffin or strange item that they want in here.
Yeah.
Tidewater has something similar, where that's like a phenomenon that happens there, where it's like things show up, you know, just constantly are washing up on shore. I don't remember, I'd have to check again if we ended up doing it where it's always first stage stuff or just weird stuff.
Yeah.
This could be interesting as well. I mean, it also could be like, I'm thinking of points of interest, right? So like, this is a location. Can we have, you know, where all the, you know, where the docks were and all the ships were destroyed, is there kind of like, if those things were washed inland a little bit, is there a place where all of those ships are kind of clustered together, you know, almost like this little ship graveyard, but it's been washed inshore, you know, or washed inland a little bit.
Do you remember the location that we ended up dropping a long time ago?
Yep.
Maybe one of their biggest ships is you know, couple, it's lost. They have yet to find it. Mm. And inside of it, there was, you know, a bunch of equipment that would be useful to the village or some old trinkets or something
that's,
like that.
Yeah, that's cool.
And now it's being, you know, lived in by some sort of thing, which could kind of be fun. Maybe the eel is over by that. Maybe the eel guards the ship now. It lives inside of it partially.
That's cool.
Well, with all that being said, I want to wrap up this episode because we've talked for an hour now and there's some good stuff though. I like where this one went. This is definitely the most sad
this is location. This is a heavy one.
That being said, thank you so much for joining us on this episode. Adam, Ari, and myself, Jeremiah, I've enjoyed having you here. This is the Obajima podcast. You can check us out on Spotify and Amazon Music and VOD on YouTube and Apple Music and all sorts of other things. Thank you so much for jumping on with us. We will catch you next time.